Warning! This is part two of a two-parter, so if you haven't heard the first part, go back and listen to it. Also, yeah. This podcast may contain bad language and content that some listeners may find jizzable.
Jizzable. So, offensive.
Depends if you find jizzable offensive.
I'm sure some people will. It's inherently quite gooey.
Much like the content of this podcast. Is it? The inside of a very moist cake.
I mean,
that's how I like to think of Cecil podcast, the inside of a moist cake. Would you like to smear that all over you?
I have literally nothing to say to that.
Welcome to the Cecil podcast with T and Cleves.
Each week, offering up a blurry perspective on life. Hello and welcome to part dose of a two-parter. As mentioned by Cleves, he ended this in a part one. Fuck off and go back to listen to part one. Come on.
For the sake of Falling Squirrel, I'm sorry for the intro. Guys are genuinely good guys and I feel like, I don't want to disrespect them in any way, really.
And this could have been a non-explicit episode, but we've ruined it completely and we could re-record, but we're not going to.
So we roll. Fucking it up from the start.
Yes. So, Cleves, part two, what's this about?
Part two is the future of accessible gaming, audio-based gaming, just general accessible gaming.
And of course, we're still chatting to Dave and Jamie from Falling Squirrel about The Veil, Shadow of the Crown, and everything that went into that as well. So, we hope you enjoyed the second part of this interview.
Stay tuned for afterwards as well, because we're going to do a little bit of
housework.
Yeah.
As you alluded to, Jamie, I'm going to let Dave run loose a little bit here because, like, of course, the voice acting and that side of things is very important on a narrative game. So, of course, you mentioned getting members of the blind and visually impaired community involved at the voice acting side of things.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I made a decision right from the very beginning is I wanted a certain, I definitely wanted to have some representation or at least make a very, like a honest, serious effort for that. At the same time, I did not want to compromise the quality of the performances. So the first thing that made this trickier than I'd hoped was that I didn't want North American accents for, I don't know if it's a particularly North American sensibility, but I get taken out of fantasy scenarios. Yeah. Like when you hear a guy, someone with a Bronx accent walks in, like he came off a subway in New York and it's like, who's this dude? So you lean on like an English center. By the way, I was on the fence as whether or not it should be a Middle Eastern center to the game. And this is a Middle Eastern character moving away from a Western sort of civilization or whatever. I really did go by the casting. I cast a huge number of people asking for accents that were connected, either their accents or they're very good at accents, or they can channel a relative, like an uncle or something, a Syrian uncle. And like it. So I did have that as the high bar. I wanted to make sure the accents were decent at least. And then the main character solidified around an English accent because of the woman I found to play, Karen Knox, who was just fantastic. So that's where it started. So that was the reason I decided to have her journey home east, which kind of flips things, to be a more English sounding, a British sounding area, moving away from where she starts, the borderlands, which ends up being sort of placelessly Persian or Eastern European. So that was, it was mainly the accents I had out of Toronto, essentially. And then when I started, trying to find people within the community, ACTRA, the union there, we actually didn't have a tremendous amount of success finding people who could do the accents within the blind and low vision community. They actually didn't have a lot of people on roster for this, which I was a little surprised. So then I threw the net out huge and then eventually found actually one of our playtesters in the very first playtest we had was a radio personality named Rami Amuthan, who, interestingly enough, I didn't know what accent she wanted to try. I actually had her attempt an English accent, which wasn't half bad, but it wasn't there quite. And she said, her parents are Sri Lankan, but she said, I can do a West Indian accent. And I'm like, okay. So that's what we decided for her. And that wasn't overly Western. I realize it's the West Indies, but it just kind of worked for the, she was playing a street kid in this scenario. And I thought it just kind of worked for the feeling of the village. And we ended up giving her one of the main roles in the game. She's the one in the Baker Quest, yeah. Who's the young street kid. And then there was a woman who could do accents, and a lot of different ones, who spoke Serbian. And so she could take on and field a lot of the Eastern European accents, as well as do some British accents. And she became a jack of all trades character. She plays about 7 roles in the game. And she's out of the States. And then I also ended up running a little thin on the British accents. So I ended up casting out of London. There's a studio in London, England that I met on at a conference, and he was a voice director, and he said, "Oh, I'd love to help." So I ended up filling in the bulk of the British side characters came from London. And there was one person within the blind low vision community who came out of that. So it's basically 3 or 4 people from the community. And I really just played, it was casting for their abilities, and hoping, praying that I would be able to cast within the community, which we were able to do. And I learned a lot about how to record someone who can't see as well. I didn't even conceive of how different this would be, but the idea of cold reading from a page is not an option.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, maybe they'll memorize, or we'll have to have some, I'll have to send them ahead of time and they'll put it on a Braille machine or something, because one of our consultants has some sort of a shorthand sort of Braille output that he can feel texts and things. But both of the women that played the two I mentioned, Ramya and Tanya is her name, from the States, they both recorded from robot playback while they're talking. So it's not like they'd listen to the line and say it. They would be hearing the line in their ear as they're saying it, in this weird Cyrano de Bergerac sort of thing, where they're like someone's whispering less, but they're, and it was crazy listening to a robot voice be translated into a very human performance in real time. I was sort of stunned, but it takes a lot of practice. Both of them said they've been doing this for years. Ramya did it on her show. She's a radio celebrity. I don't know. She's works for AMI TV in Canada. And then Tanya is an actor. So they had both used this thing, but we had to do things like make sure there's no bleed from the headphones onto the track and stuff like that. But it was cool. I really enjoyed learning that. And now I'd be prepared to do it again.
Speaking of doing it again, I guess this kind of brings us towards the end. Do you have plans to do anything like this again, even in like a different setting? Like me and Tony were talking earlier, we said it potentially worked really great as a sort of horror game.
Yeah, and that's usually where people start, is horror, because I don't want to say it's a cheap win, but it's so effective. It's such an effective thing to do, to take away a sight. It's such a classic thing to do in horror. Horror movies are dark, cameras are really close, you can't see off screen. So limiting people's perceptions and ability to take things in is a huge aspect of horror. So I think those are always a slam dunk to do binaural audio stuff. A lot of the stuff within the community made games and embraced games are, there's a MUD called Swamp, which is a zombie shooter. And again, those work pretty well. We'd wondered if we wanted to take range combat take it a step up and have another noisy scenario, a future sort of sci-fi scenario. There's also talk of because of where the community would love to see us add to expand combat. That seemed to be where people got the most, were the most interested in having something that's more replayable in that, like an arena fighter, where we kind of untether movement a little bit, where you can do a little run and gunning with the bow. I actually had a bug at one point where the bear was attacking me and it wasn't setting me into what do you call it, melee. And I actually realized it was actually not too bad to run around and shoot arrows at the bear and then potentially lock you into combat or have another version of combat, melee combat, sort of maybe something you choose to go into. So those are the things that we're thinking about expanding. I'm working on another project right now, so I'd love to start looking at that maybe in the summer and then potentially picking up the story on some level. I mean, the holy grail for me is to take this world and what we've started and I mean, let a little more robust RPG with visuals, where people from the low vision community, people from the hearing impaired community, physical disability community could sort of come together, choose the kind of character they wanted, which could potentially have disabilities represented as aspects of their of what they who they play, but you wouldn't be limited by your disability to who you are. So you could choose a character that was sighted, you could choose a character that was blind, and the experience might change, but there all accessibility would always be there. So you could play whomever you want. That's sort of the dream, I think.
I think even ideally, it would be really nice to see that in a PvP environment, to have different players having, you know, an equitable experience, even though the perception of the game is different. So a fully visual game that, you know, a sighted player can see and interact with like any other visual game, but they can play with on a team or against a player who is part of the blind and low vision community, but the gameplay experience is equitable. That maybe the character abilities do different things, maybe the way that they interact with the game environment is different, but ultimately they are playing the same game and interacting with each other in an equitable game space. That would be the pinnacle.
Yeah, I think it, for a sighted person, that give it that replayability factor if something like that was on offer.
It's great to hear that there's things sort of in the pipelines, and it's such a huge step forwards in the right direction, like the veil and what it can sort of open up going forwards, because you've made a game which is accessible to the blind community. To be honest, I've never heard of a lot of sort of like accessible games up until this point. I've heard of a few, but because you've gone to a mainstream audience on Xbox and PC, that's a huge step forwards. And there's been some accessibility in the past with certain other games, but it's always been an afterthought. There are a lot of studios that still do not consider accessibility even on their radar. It's, a lot of them think, oh, accessibility, shove some subtitles in there. And you think, that's not enough. But to lead with what you guys have done, where you've not just sort of made an accessible game, but you've made a great narrative game which has no visuals. Like, that's how I think of it. Like, there's no visuals to it, and it's a narrative game that anyone can enjoy, as opposed to here's a game for the blind community.
It's just a great game all round, really, as opposed to just a great game for blind people.
Yeah.
I feel sort of confident. I don't know if you guys have the same confidence that with things like Last of Us Part 2, big companies that have the means are going to start getting this right and or do a better job. And for the interesting thing I sort of want to qualify everything we did with is in a weird way, even though we involved the sighted community early on, I feel like we made a audio-based game, not an accessible game, an audio-based game with the help of a community that really understood what the genre could do. And they helped us make a game for the sighted community in this really weird backwards way. In the end of it, I really felt like, because the concept and the mechanics we're using they existed. They have a history in this community, and we're kind of introducing the rest of game players to this idea. And also, I have to acknowledge that the game isn't accessible for the blind community. So, you know, an accessible game, and the one that we hope to make, I think one day, would be a visual game with all these things we learn from audio gaming. But I think it's also okay to make an experience that stands alone. It's like when you do music, you don't think of its accessibility. You think of making music and understanding that genre. And I felt like we made an audio game and tried to make a much bigger audio game than had been made before. And that's maybe where we may have succeeded, because I don't think there's too many games that are quite this big that are audio only.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear you guys express that sentiment, because that was the goal. I remember, you know, doing the pitch documentation or funding applications, and that was the goal. You know, there were games that existed like this, and you know, a big shout out goes to A Blind Legend, and you know, there were plenty of audio games, but lots are made by hobbyists or don't have a budget to, you know, hire the voice talent that we did, or to get, you know, the really professional contractors or somebody like Dave, who has decades of experience in film and TV and AAA games. And we really hope that we would be able to make a kind of product that would bridge that divide between here are people who are playing this game because it's accessible to them and there isn't enough game content that is accessible to them. And here are people who play lots of games but want to experience something that is new and novel. And I'm not sure if this is a accurate correction to Dave, what you were just saying. I think you meant to say that the game is not accessible to the hearing impaired community. Ooh. And that making a visual game would help with that. Yeah. So that, you know, there are still shortcomings that our game has. There aren't subtitles. There is no way currently if you have hearing impairment, even a partial one. Let's say like you can hear better in one ear than the other to accommodate that. And you know, we are aware, and unfortunately it's just as a result of the limited scope of development, there's not too much we can do with this project. But like Dave said, we would love to work on another project that is as accessible as possible. Yeah, so thank you. It's really nice to know that you know, we met the mark, at least according to you guys, which is great.
Definitely.
Yeah. And on like the hearing impaired, I do sort of like hear that, especially with what you've put out with the Veil, like it would have been very difficult to make it accessible to the hearing impaired. But I suppose I would always say that the visual impairment side of things closes down a lot more doors than the hearing impairment does. I know a few deaf people and they will play AAA games, throw the subtitles on and be quite happy. And then I just sit there thinking, I would love to be able to play that, but there's literally no way I can play that. I feel like, especially in the blind community, you miss out on a lot more. And I know inclusion is really important. But if I'm being a bit selfish, I wouldn't mind seeing a bit more a bit more like the Veil in the blind community, because sometimes I think it's a higher mountain to climb sometimes. I think that does put a lot of people off.
And especially for an indie developer, I would encourage people to really think of audio and audio gaming as a legit genre that does something different. It is super intimate. And what you get out of binaural audio is special. I mean, one thing I will say, especially in indie development, is when I'm talking to a main character and they're standing next to me and breathing, and I have a really good actor performing that character, I completely believe they're there. I'm not staring at their hair and saying that hair texture is terrible or the facial animation is uncanny valley. It doesn't look quite right. I mean, it's even the absolute best AAA experience still can take you out of it with the technology. And I do feel like there is something much more immersive about that experience in taking away the visuals. So I think there is something to say for it as a genre, a not completely accessible genre, again, in the hearing impaired community, but a valid genre that should be expanded, especially in indie game devs where you have to focus on something. And leave it to the big boys I really think they're, well, I'd like to do it too, but they're the ones that I think, again, everyone should follow Last of Us Part Two's lead and start doing that for their games when they have the money.
Yeah, and touching on I guess, inclusion and representation really quickly, there was just a few days ago a Xbox conference or Xbox stream all about their accessibility program you know, the projects that they're working on to really, I think, reach new bounds for the kind of accessibility that I hope we can expect to see in more games. So, you know, even though I don't think you're wrong in saying that, you know, there's definitely not enough accessible content or representation of accessibility in games, I think that it's starting to ramp up really quickly. Even in the time that we, you know, started versus finished the Veil, we've seen a lot more just general accessibility options in games. I think maybe only a small handful of games had colorblind options when we started. And now most of the, especially AAA games that I've played since we've finished, all have colorblind options, and we're seeing more and more accessibility options come out in games. So yeah, definitely. This is a good both encouragement that it's happening and it's good and we like to see that, and a reminder that it's worthwhile to spend the time and focus on if you are a developer.
100%. It's been great having both of you on. I think this has been so educational. I've loved hearing about the inner workings of the Veil and sort of where the thought process was. And it's been great having you both on.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, you guys are great. Thanks so much. This was really fun.
Oh, I thought you were just going to swear, Jamie. I thought you had to swear on the podcast.
I was thinking about a rant about, are there developers who should pivot their adult entertainment games into the audio accessibility market? But we can save that for
now. Awesome. Cheers, guys.
One thing I will say, just as an addendum to this whole thing, is I always forget to mention it. People like say, I say I'm an indie game developer, and this is kind of, this is our focus. This is what we do, and we work at the CNIB. But we do have a grant system in Canada that I have to acknowledge. Like the Ontario government, they also allow us to do projects like this with the funding, and Xbox. They helped us as well, and I never give them the right kudos because I don't. I have to feed my family and things like that. So I couldn't do a project this big as a hobby. I forget that list a lot, but.
That's a big thank you to Ontario Create. Microsoft has been really helpful. I always feel like I'm forgetting a million and one people. AudioGames.net, Martin Corcellis, the CNIB.
It's not an award show, Jamie. Do you guys have music? Can you play them off? Can you just play them off?
Just cut it all. It's fine.
And we're back from the past Cleves, T, Jamie, and D.
You shortened his name to D.
I did.
It's not a T and D.
T, Jamie, Cleves. Jamie, and Cleves. Yes.
Yeah, it works. It's a nice ring.
It's a thing now. I'm hoping that they'll come back on after listening to this because they've got some really good ideas and attitudes about accessible gaming. And
where they want to go with it, I think, is really good.
Yes.
When they were speaking about having sort of multiple characters with potential different flaws, in the sense that it gives you a different sensory experience of a game, whether you don't see any visuals, whether maybe you don't hear anything, maybe whether your character has a particular disability or something like that. That won't be defined by the disability, but if you're a sighted person, it gives you that replayability factor to go through a game again and again. It's not fucking Claire and Leon in Resident Evil 2, is it? Where it's basically the same shitting character doing the same scenario, except with a little bit different story. The whole experience will change in a single game.
I agree. And I think it's quite a mountain to climb. I do think it is. But the concept, if it's implemented correctly, it's such a unique idea. Of course, you've got to tap into the industry, like they did with the Veil.
Yeah, the CNIB and getting partially people on board with the development.
Exactly. And I think that's what you have to do. And huge strides were taken to sort of bridge that gap, to find out from the horse's mouth, if you will, what the issues are. And as mentioned, there were warning flags of don't do this, don't do this as well. So I think a big collaborative piece. They're a small studio, so they did... I think they did an amazing job with the resources they had.
Got big ambitions for the future. I think that's the main thing. And they mentioned, obviously, the likes of The Last of Us Part 2 and Naughty Dog and things like that. The big companies, they were saying, are going to start working in those accessible qualities to their games to reach new audiences. And potentially that's where people will start to follow.
I'm going to be that anti-consumerism douchebag here. And I'm just going to say,
for a change.
You're a dick. But what I will say is that this doesn't have to cost money. I mean, if it's great to get consultants on, and I know Naughty Dog threw a lot of money around for consultancy and stuff like that for Last of Us Part 2. But I don't know about you, Cleese, but let's say for the school we're let's do another game, and they came to us and said, do you want it to be do some consultancy on this? Or do some voice acting or something like that. a paycheck isn't what I have in mind. I'm thinking about accessibility and what good it can do.
I think a lot of people with visual impairment will be on the same page.
I'd say disability in general. Like, I think just the disabled community are so eager for this inclusivity.
Desperate, you mean? It's completely desperate.
Yes.
To be a part of something.
Yeah, I would say so. But at the same time, it's like, I think you can't put a financial, you can't put a big, dollar sign next to that.
You got it. At this point, it's really for the good of everyone with a disability.
Yes.
So payment's kind of out the window. Maybe down the line, when things start to become a bit more niche, sure. But at this point, everyone should be involved to help the general cause.
I completely agree.
What we will say is that not everyone has enjoyed the game like we enjoyed it. So we are going to take the last few minutes of the podcast to just talk about some of the negatives that were raised in reviews.
So firstly, all reviews are subjective. And what we're going to say here is no way an attack on anyone's opinions. Your opinion is your own. You're entitled to it.
Even if you are wrong.
And we're not implying that anyone's wrong in this.
I might be.
You might be. But coming from the perspective of two blind guys, I think we have a bit more of authority to speak about this than those who are not visually impaired. Let's just throw it under the bus. The Escapist.
It was mentioned by Dave and Jamie, to be fair, that there wasn't a particularly
glowing review.
No. It was mixed bag.
It was. There were some positive things in the review from the Escapist magazine, and we disagree with a lot of the points raised, although we do agree with a few.
Well, let's start at the beginning. They couldn't even get the fucking developer's name right.
Like, if you watch the YouTube video, they say developer is Flying Squirrel. So, firstly, get your fucking facts right.
Start with the basics.
Yes. Playing devil's advocate. I don't remember the game expressly saying you should listen with headphones. If you don't play with headphones, you're not going to have a good time. It's a binaural experience. Having headphones on is really important. I don't think the game expressly says that, but maybe that's something that can be patched in. But yeah, some of the puzzles there, like you said, with the pitfalls, I think really useful. And of course, some of the outlines of the review were never get repetitive. And I don't think they shone the light enough on things like the hunting sequences, where it is about tracking.
Yeah. So one of the things that they mentioned was sort of ranged combat potentially wasn't used as well as it could be. But again, that's what Dave and Jamie said. You've only got X amount of budget to work with. It's the first game of its type in terms of a global game that's accessible for everyone. So not everything's going to be 100% perfect.
Yeah.
But you've got to start somewhere. And that was one of the things they said they wanted to improve, if anything. When Dave was talking about the bug with the bear, he said maybe you could move around a little bit more and the range combat could be a bit more versatile in games coming up.
When this bug happened, just moving around, listening for that bear, tracking it and shooting it with the bow because it wouldn't engage melee mode. It was too late into development, but that seems a really interesting concept and it worked. So that's something that's going to be developed on. So that has more range to the combat and the sound cues itself.
And the next thing that was sort of mentioned, again, on the combat was the variation of combat, how it got a bit repetitive. Okay, yeah, I get that to an extent. But the enemies were varied up, and again, they were talking about how combat was used. With the audio sensory experience, they were saying you have that head transfer, shit, I can't remember what it was called. But anyway, in terms of how big your head is, what your ears listen to, and that sort of thing, that you can't have sort of enemies that are at 360 angles. So they're sort of limited, not necessarily by their own constraints, but by the human body's constraints.
Yeah.
In what you can and can't do in terms of battle. So yes, there was only three ways that you could fight left, right and up, but that's not the fault of them. They had those constraints and they tried to work with those constraints in the sense of they tried to make the battle different. Sometimes you're running or on horseback, or sometimes you needed different attacks to beat enemies.
And arrows are flying at you.
Exactly. You work within the constraints you've got. And they always say that the best way to promote creativity is to give someone constraints. And I think working within those constraints, I think they did a good job.
I do. some of those fights were genuinely very tough.
And even, that's the thing, you know the basics of the battle sequences from the start, and yet you get three quarters through the game, and it's still pissing you off at points. I'm still wanting to throw the controller out the window.
And what I will say is, like, for that criticism of, like, it's very simplistic, how many fucking games rely on the same concepts constantly?
I mean, look at Zelda, man.
Timed puzzles, the same things all the time. And they're even going, like, let's go a bit more mainstream, Call of Duty. You choose a gun, you shoot someone, you throw a grenade. Like, I'm sorry, but criticising the dynamics of a game is childish, dare I say?
They were talking about PvP, like, it'd be good if you could fight other players within that scenario. And I think, especially if the proximity to move around, like you could with ranged combat, that would work. Again, takes a bit of developing.
Yeah.
But this is the first of its type. So you could potentially walk around, listen to other people moving and what attacks they're doing within a particular arena, if you like, and fight other people. That could be down the line.
Yes, 100%. So the next thing that sort of springs to mind.
Story.
Okay.
It was questioned that the story was a bit basic, but I actually didn't have a problem with the story. There were points where maybe I thought, all right, am I getting a little bit bored? And then there'd be something that dragged me back in. But isn't that kind of what you want from a game? There's the tough parts, there's the parts where you have to grind sometimes, and then there's points that just keep you coming back once you've done a certain bit. So I don't really get that point.
I mean, you're always going to be constrained when you have a blind protagonist. And as mentioned by Dave and Jamie, they didn't want to opt into, like, the tropes. And I think that's really well done by them. By the end, there was a little bit of predictability with some of the story. But what stories aren't predictable? Like, everything has been seen at this point.
I mean,
it's so rare. I mean, you watch a Marvel film and they're all the same.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Doesn't mean I don't enjoy them. At the same time, I don't really get the whole point of, like, the story isn't great. I think that it's a likeable protagonist. The side casts are pretty good.
That was one thing that they brought up in the review, that the protagonist is overly optimist. What protagonist isn't? You have to have someone with that drive to go forward. Otherwise, what's the point? If you have a protagonist, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm really mopey, I'll just give up after the first fucking battle. It's not a protagonist, is it?
It's just the thing that you want someone who you can root for. And, okay, there were some scenes of hardship. There were, like, I'm not spoiling anything in this game, but there were some scenes which made Alex, the protagonist, really, like, taken aback. And they tried to, they developed the character. And, yeah, that's what it is. But their optimism drove them forwards.
There's places to go with it, I think.
100%. And some of the side characters...
Oh, mate, some of the side characters were gold. It was questioned whether the voice acting brought you out of the experience. I personally don't think it did. I thought the voice acting was quite good.
Yes.
And again, it was mentioned when we spoke to Jamie and Dave that sometimes the visuals can bring you out of a game if something's a bit crusty and, you know, the animation's not quite there. But I don't think that was necessarily the case with The Veil. I thought the voice acting was, on the whole, quite good.
Yes.
But I can't really knock it.
I agree. I think on the whole it was really good. I enjoyed it. The portrayal of characters was great, and, like, you got to remember, this is a low budget studio. Like, they're not a Naughty Dog who can go out and spend $100,000 on getting someone like Nolan North or someone like that in to do, like, voice work, like professional, been doing it for 30-year voice acting. Like, these aren't people they can get. So I think within their constraints, I think the voice acting was fantastic, to be honest. Well, I never really noticed it as an issue.
One of those things Dave mentioned was the budget. Considering they're an indie developer, I think they made a great game on a great on a tight budget.
I agree.
I think as well, the fact that we're talking about it and the fact that a lot of people are talking about it means that they've done something, even if it's not the hugest thing, they've done something relevant.
You can't pass up the fact that this is such an influential game. Okay, we referenced The Last of Us 2, like here and in the interview. But that was a mainstream game that put
accessible features into it. But this was a game built from the ground up with accessibility in mind, with the idea of everyone should be able to play this. And I think that's such an important thing. You can't underplay what For the School have done here. They have made a mainstream game that just happens to be accessible. I'm not going to say it's a perfect game. And I have some hang-ups about it. I do, and I think that just means that there's development potential there. And as mentioned, you know, by developers Dave and Jamie, like, I think they're very keen to get out there and do some exciting things going forwards. For a game like The Veil, Shadow of the Crown, to come out and to get flack, it's getting flack from full-sighted people who are judging it just as a game.
They're missing the importance of it, I think.
Yes. Put a blindfold on and queue up like five different games, including The Veil, and say to them afterwards, which was the best game out of all of those and how would you rate it? And they'd go The Veil every single time. Okay, we even get past the fucking menu on the other four. If you're going to review a game that's predominantly there for accessibility, but also given a great experience at the same time and a great story, maybe this is a consideration you should be making.
On that,
closing thoughts.
Great foundation game, I would say.
Get the good work, boys. Adios.
Thanks for listening to the Seesaw Podcast.
You can find us on Facebook at Seesaw Podcast, Twitter, Seesaw Pod. You can email us at seesawpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on TikTok and Instagram at Seesaw Podcast or Seesaw Pod, depending on which one we want. But get us on the other places.
This podcast was recorded in front of a blind audience.